if you've got $120,000 in debt, and even if you're making $50,000, like, you can't out frugal $120K in debt on that salary. Like, no amount of roommates or catering leftovers is going to make that disappear in 10 months.
My guest off guard because we were talking and then I just started right away. Boom. I am trapped in my house right now. Not really trapped, but I'm hunkering down because we're enjoying the first snow day of the year of the like fall 2017 season. And I love it. It's magical. And so I thought, what better thing to do today than talk to all my money people? Because this is actually the second person I'll be talking to about money things and stuff. And it's Kara, not Cara Stevens from Bravely Go. Hi.
Hi. It's actually Kara Perez.
Oh my God. You know what? I know a Kara Stevens and I'm trying to figure out what's happening. That's okay. I'm not even going to edit that out because I think that's really funny. And then maybe the Kara Stevens that I know will be like, Michelle, what is wrong with you? So Kara Perez, not Kara Stevens. How are you today?
Great. I'm doing really well. Kicking off the week, hitting the ground running, nice. Living my best life.
Nice. Okay, so let's get into it. Introduce yourself and let people know who you are and kind of what you do.
So hello, everyone. My name is Kara Perez, not Kara Stevens. And I own a company called Bravely that does financial literacy events and online content for women. I am also a freelance writer focusing mostly in the personal finance sphere. So that's how I fill my work hours. I'm based in Austin, Texas, but I'm actually originally from the Northeast. So it's really hot in Texas, but I remember snow days from my childhood. And let's see, I really love peanut butter and the color green.
All righty then. You know what? I feel like I couldn't really trust you if you didn't like peanut butter. I just feel like that's just one of those non-negotiables.
I completely agree. Like, if you're not eating peanut butter on the reg, I'm like, who are you? What are you doing?
I might give you a little pass if you have like a nut allergy and you eat like sun butter. I can do that too. But if you're not eating some kind of seed or nut butter on the regular, I'm questioning what's happening, what's going on. It's a really good frugal food actually because you get all your protein in and it sticks to your innards.
It's great to save some money and it's just satisfying. It's really delicious.
Technically the nut butters are not frugal.
I guess that's true.
I mean, the seed butters. So like if you're doing sunflower butter, it's expensive. Let's just be real here. But but if you get peanut butter, especially after, and no one followed my advice on this, but I do this normally. You know when they have like those recalls of product and people freak out and then the product, like they take the tainted stuff off the shelf. But then the other products still, like, then people are afraid, and so the product gets cheaper. I usually buy a lot of it when that happens.
Oh, yeah. I support that.
So, like, it happened with peanut butter a few years ago, and then I was like, oh, my God, I'm buying a lot of peanut butter. I was sad for the people, obviously, who got ill. I mean, come on. But afterwards, because no one died, everyone just got, like, we're sick and we won't talk into what happened. But then there was an opportunity to buy peanut butter for like 97 cents. And I was like, okay, I'm going to buy like 10 of them, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of feel like, you know, like if something like fish or meat gets recalled, I'm not
going
to go out.
No, we're not going there.
But with peanut butter, I'm like, yes, stock up. I think that's smart. Of course, like just be, you know, taking a little bit of a risk, but it's fine. you know, no one listened to us, but that's what we're doing.
No, that's what we do. But so this is a really good segue into talking about your debt payoff journey. So I think for a lot of people, they're probably wondering who you are and what you do. We kind of gave the overview, but we didn't like get into the nitty gritty. So as this is a personal finance entrepreneurship / occasional travel show, I want to kind of talk about the personal finance piece of your story. Why peanut butter would, you know, figure into that so much. And just talk about what you did and how you became a personal finance influencer.
Yeah. So my journey into the personal finance world is, I feel like, so similar to many other people's and also completely unique. So I graduated in 2011 from a liberal arts college on the East Coast, and I had a little over $25,000 in student loan debt. And as people will probably remember, 2011 was smack dab in the middle of the recession. And
fun times.
I couldn't find a job to save my life. Like, nobody cared about my English degree. Nobody cared about which college I was from. It was just like a wasteland with no jobs. So I moved home right out of college and lived for free with my mom for my first year out of college and got a job waiting tables, which was enough money for me to, you know, pay my car insurance, pay my gas, save a little bit of money, but certainly I didn't make any big headway on my loans. I started paying when my 6-month grace period was up. And occasionally I would pay a little bit more than what I owed, but it was like $10 on this loan, $7 on that loan. It was very haphazard. Mm. And then I moved to Austin. Ooh, I just hit my mic.
I was like, you didn't hit your head now. Like, let's not get crazy over there.
I talk with my hands and I just slapped the mic.
Mic drop.
I moved to Austin in 2012 and still couldn't find a job. So I continued to wait tables here. And I also had an unpaid internship on a web series that then turned into a paid internship. I made $500 a month at that internship. So
damn,
I was
a lot of money.
So much money. So anyway, I was hella broke and I had all of this debt. It was just really hanging over my head. And in June 2014, 3 years out of college, I still had $18,000 in student loan debt left. Mm. And I still didn't have a job. I was working two really part-time jobs. I was working as a caterer and as a receptionist at an MMA gym. Neither of which I wanted to do with my life. So I was just like really sad, really broke. And I was living with three friends, all of whom I love dearly, but who come from very different financial backgrounds than I do. And so none of them had debt. And they were just able to do things that I wasn't able to do, where it was like, they don't have to work this shitty job because they don't have to make those debt payments, or they can take the weekend off and go out into the Texas Hill Country and just, you know, like, I always had to be working. I always had to be generating income because I was making so little. I was working for $9 an hour at the gym and $12 an hour at the catering company. So I just like wasn't making that much money. So missing a shift was like,
was a big deal,
a huge deal. And I just realized like, holy shit, no one is gonna come rescue me. And it's been 3 years. I haven't done anything I wanted to do. I'm not living the life I want to live. And if I don't take serious action and change my life, I'm going to be stuck in this vicious cycle forever. So I like to call that my like money epiphany. And
epiphany.
Yes, exactly. My epiphany.
Your epiphany was real.
It was so real. It was so real. I was really anxious and pretty depressed in that time period. And so I just kind of was like, girl, you can either continue sucking or you can try to suck less.
Wow. If someone else walked into the middle of that comment, I don't know if they would understand what we were talking about.
You're right. You're totally right. But I chose option B. I was like, I'm going to try and suck less as a human being.
Right.
And I started picking up any extra work that I could. And I started working 5 different jobs, 7 days a week. And in 10 months, I had paid off that last $18,000 in a year that I would make $32,000.
I have a question about the other 3 jobs you picked up, because I think you were working 2 jobs. So what were the other 3 jobs?
Yeah. So I picked up a coaching job at a local high school here. I played lacrosse in high school and college. So I started coaching lacrosse, and I started working for a nonprofit as a fundraiser, or basically like a development organizer. I planned events that were built around fundraising and like organized the database and helped them do stuff like that. And then I did a lot of like odd jobs that were kind of seasonal. But the other main job I did was social media management as a freelancer. And then I did little things like the same school that I coached at, I drove a van for. I would drive out to the school, park my car, pick up a van, load, like the golf team would get in the van, and then I would drive them to the golf course. And then I would drive the van back to the school, get in my car, and drive home. And they paid me $1,500 to do that for like 2 months. And I was like, great, absolutely. I'll totally take that money.
There's a question about all those little things. One day you're just like, this sucks. What were some of the action steps you took? Like, you're saying you got these jobs, but I think there's some people who are like, well, how did you get these jobs? Where did you look? Like, how quickly were you able to start turning it around?
Man, you know what? No one has ever asked me that question before, and I think it's a great question. And I found my jobs on Craigslist. That's where I got the social media management job.
I love Craigslist.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. My house is full of Craigslist furniture. And that's where I got, like I said, the social media job. And then there was a website for lacrosse players and coaches that I cannot remember the name of right now. But I went on that website because I had known about it since I played lacrosse. And so I was just like, let me see if there are any coaching jobs available. And there was. So I emailed someone I found from that website to get the coaching job. The nonprofit job, a friend of mine knew I was really sad and broke and was like, hey, I don't know if you're interested at all, but this nonprofit is looking for someone for like 10 hours a week. And I was like, yes, let me get that interview. Here we go. And it was a newer nonprofit. They'd only been around for like a year, so they couldn't pay very much. And they didn't have, I had like no competition for that job. They were paying $11 an hour. So I was like, great, I'll take that.
So the reason why I ask these like really pointed questions is, one, you just shared the amount you were getting paid from one of these jobs, $11 an hour. But that small amount of money, even after taxes, all that effort started to compound. And so I think what I'm interested in, after kind of hearing about all those different, you just started looking. Was this daily that you were looking, just telling people? Was this daily sustained action?
Yes, 100%. Once I kind of locked down all of the different jobs, which took me about 3 months, once I had just increased how much I was working and how much I was working for, it was just, okay, well, now you just have to do the work. So step one in my payoff plan. So, you know, June 2014, I'm crying a lot. I'm really depressed. I'm only working these 2 shitty jobs. And then like October 2014, I'm working 5 jobs.
Wow.
I'm pretty much working like 40 hours a week at all of this different stuff. And it's just like, keep the ball rolling, keep working. Everything's hourly, so I have to show up. I have to get the work done. And then it's like, okay, well, now I've increased my income. I think it's also important to note, in 2014, I made $18,000. So increasing to $32,000 was a really big jump for me, even though overall it's still not a ton of money. But since I had been living, I think in 2014, I literally spent about $10,000 on my life, like food, rent, car, everything.
Woo.
Yeah, it was like bare bones. but since I was already living on such extreme frugal mode, all of this extra money I started earning, I just put it all into my debt. I was like, I don't need to buy food. I'll just eat my catering leftovers. Great. Here's an extra $60 I can put towards this debt payment, right? Or like, I can't think of a single other example. But like,
that was a pretty legit one, actually. I kind of love it.
That was my life. That was my life.
I absolutely love it. So once you paid off the debt, I'm trying to figure out what happened next. Like what, because I kind of feel like that action attracted other things. And how did Bravely come into play? Like what happened as a result of getting that paid off and all of that sustained action?
Yeah, it definitely did attract stuff to my life. So when I first started getting serious about wanting to pay off my debt, I was starting from ground zero, not just with I didn't have very much money. I also just had no financial literacy. I was like, I don't even know how to pay off my debt. Like, how do I even approach this? So I Googled it, like I do with everything in my life. I Googled pay off student loans faster. And if you do that, you'll get all these incredible debt payoff stories. You know, the ones that make it to like, you know, MSNBC and Yahoo's news page where it's like, Gina paid off $100,000 in credit card debt. And I was like, great, Gina, how are you doing this?
Well, Kara, this is what I did.
Yeah, exactly. So I read like 90 bajillion articles of these people who had paid off debt. And from that, I gleaned a lot of information, like the debt avalanche method versus the debt snowball method. Or like, oh, this person sold their car and started biking. Well, like, I have a bike, I can do that. Or all of this different information, and I just applied it to my life. And after I paid off the debt, well, actually, let me back it up. So I found all these stories and was like, cool. You know what I'm not seeing is really low income people like me doing this. Oh. I've always wanted to be a writer. I'm going to write about my experience. So I started a blog and wrote about what I did as I was doing it. I was like, today I'm catering, you know, and like, I expect to be taking home X amount here. I'm going to apply it to this loan. I think I'll pay this loan off in X amount of time. Or, you know, I just wrote as I was doing it. And then I got on Twitter and started sharing my articles. So I built this audience in the personal finance world. And because I was really the only person telling it from my point of view, which is I was like, I'm in my 20s, I'm healthy, I have a college degree, I'm broke, and I have all this debt. Here's how I'm tackling it. It like, I didn't have kids, I'm not married, I had a very unique perspective. And that kind of gained me, I grew a platform pretty quickly because I was the only person talking from that perspective. So after I paid off the debt, I still had the blog, I still had the followers, and I started going to more events here in Austin and introducing myself as a personal finance writer. And I started, like, that's a conversation starter because no one talks about money. Money's very taboo. And so if you say, you know, like, what do you do? Oh, I'm a teacher. Oh, I'm a digital marketer. Oh, I'm a personal finance writer. People are like, oh, interesting. I could stand to be a little bit better with money. Or that's cool. What do you write about? Not at the time, I was like, debt payoff. And I started having these conversations, particularly with young women who felt really intimidated by what I was doing, where they would say like, Kara, that's so cool. I'm so glad that you did that. But like, I don't even look at my bank account. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to be in debt till I die. I just know it. And I was like, this is a mirror of me in 2014, you know, you feel really overwhelmed by money. You don't know where to start. You know, you need to be better. You know, you want to be better, but you don't know how. And I was like, I can just put together all the tools that I used and all the information I have in one spot for this audience and give it to you. And so that's how Bravely kind of was birthed. It took me a year to come up with a more nuanced version of what I wanted to do with the website, to get a new name because I didn't want it to be under my old blog name, and to start generating the content that I wanted to actually see rather than just my own personal narrative.
I'm new to Bravely, we'll put it that way. And I was like, this is a business. Like when I looked at the website, I loved it, but I was like, this is not Kara's personal site in so much as it's a community site. So I think you've definitely done a really good job of creating a site that fosters community, that houses information for community versus, like you said, your own personal narrative. And I noticed it right away because I wasn't completely familiar with Bravely and its mission.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do.
So what's the response been like?
It's been overwhelmingly positive, I have to say. I started it officially, like formed the LLC, got my new website, started generating content and events under the Bravely banner in 2017. And it's been awesome. We've done, let me see, I want to say 6 events here in Austin. And my last 3 events have sold out.
Wait a minute, you charge for these events? You're in a business, but so what do you mean by sold out?
Yeah. So some of them have been free. Like the first one I did was free, but I use Eventbrite to track the tickets. So even though it's just,
I gotcha.
Cost any money, but some of them I do charge for, like I did a clothing swap and a panel on how to basically vote with your dollar and keep money in communities that you want to support. And that was $10 per ticket because I spent like a month driving around Austin, picking up clothes from people's houses to put it all together. It was a lot of work and I just couldn't not be compensated for that time because I would have gone into debt essentially. So some of them are ticketed and I mean, they're all ticketed, but some of them are free and some of them you have to pay for.
How do you feel about charging? Like, was that a weird thing for you in the beginning?
It was a little bit, especially coming from such a low income background and knowing that 3 years ago, if I had seen a $15 ticket price for an event, I'd be like, I'm not going to that. That's right. Too much money. And so for me this year, it was really important to do some events that were free so that everyone could come. There was no financial barrier. But it's also important as a business to charge something and to generate not even profit, but just to cover the costs of doing events. Because a lot of times with events, like you have to rent a venue or you have to rent a PA system or chairs. Like there are upfront costs that go into putting on an event. And I simply am not in a place where I can do every event for free all the time. I saved all of the money for Bravely out of my own writing and catering paychecks. So I am 100% self-funded. I don't have any grants or investors or anything like that. And so I have a very finite amount of money.
But you're in business. So ultimately, you don't even have to explain it. You're in business. And in order for you to get your message out, there are things that you have to do. I mean, you're structured as a business and you have to wear your business hat, if you will. And I think sometimes with women, what I've noticed is we'll be of service, but we'll be very uncomfortable with asserting and just setting those kind of financial boundaries.
Oh, yes, I completely agree. I just had this conversation with a friend the other day. She hasn't asked for a raise in a year and a half.
And
I was like, girl, you got to get more money. You absolutely have to get more money. And you see, I think you're totally right on the gender thing. Women are socialized to be nice and to be kind of the peacekeepers, and we don't want to advocate for ourselves. And so I definitely ran into some of that with Bravely, with feeling like, well, I want people to come, but I don't want to turn them off by charging. But what I actually realized is that by placing a value on my events and saying, this event is worth $10, it makes me seem much more appealing to people, because when stuff is free, it's very easy to overlook it or not think highly of it. And all of my events, I work really, really hard to make sure that we're having frank conversations like what we're having right now, where it's like, how much are you making as a freelancer? How are you setting those rates? Mm-hmm. What tools are you using? Not just like, make sure that you have a presence on social media.
Well, I freaking hate that. That's so stupid.
I know. It's so dumb. So if you come to an event, like, you are going to leave with real numbers in your head and a real understanding of how things work as financially or as a business model. And that is worth $10 to me.
shoot, it's worth more, quite honestly. So I have a question. We spoke a couple of weeks ago because you interviewed me for a project that you were working on. I'm not going to say what it is because it's not out yet. People, so just pay attention to what she's doing on her social and you'll know. But you told me something and I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. You shared your monthly outgoing expenses. So I wanted to kind of talk about that because I think that people have a lot of money flowing out of their lives. And I wanted to hear how you got to the number that you work with monthly and what kind of difference it makes in your day-to-day life.
Oh, yeah. So the number I shared was $1,300, which to me, yeah, it's a good number. It's a good number for me. And a couple of things go into that. So I'm in Austin, which is the most expensive city in Texas, but is not San Francisco. It's not Boston. It's more affordable than other places. I live with my boyfriend, so we split our expenses, and we don't split them 50-50. We split rent 50-50, but utilities we split 60-40, where he pays more because he makes about $16,000 more a year than I do. We also, I'm very frugal, and my boyfriend is also pretty frugal naturally. So when we chose the apartment that we're in, we knew we had a general area we wanted to be in, but we also were like, we don't want to pay more than $1,100, $1,200 a month in rent. And we stuck really hard to that. And when we came to the place that we're at now, we pay $1,100 a month. And they showed us an apartment that was $1,100 and then one that was $1,150. And the one that was $1,100 a month, it has kind of warped floors. So they were like, oh, the floors are a little wonky in the bedroom and in the hallway. And then the rest of the apartment is fine. So we'll knock $50 off a month, the rent, if you want. And I was like, yes, I want that. Of course I want
that. That's like a 700, almost, that's a substantial amount of money that you saved for the year.
Exactly. And so I think a couple of things go into keeping our costs low. We're really, really adamant about it. We take opportunities like that, or like my boyfriend's old roommate has a Netflix login that she said we could use. So we didn't pay for Netflix until 2 weeks ago when she canceled her account. So we were like, no. But that was a year and a half of no Netflix. We do things it's really hot in Texas, right? But I'm sitting here in my apartment. It's 87 degrees outside and the air conditioning is not on right now. And I'm here in a tank top dress. And I'm just like, yeah, we sleep with the air conditioning on, but when I'm home alone, I do not need to be heating cooling my 5-room apartment with my super expensive air conditioning. So we look for ways to save. We live a frugal lifestyle. And by having this $1,300 a month lifestyle, I'm able to save and invest, hundreds of dollars each month, which is hugely important to me.
Do you feel like you're sacrificing your quality of life? I think when people hear these types of stories, they freak out a little bit and they get a little nervous. And yeah. I think they, instead of hearing this is what I do, so I have the opportunity to do this, they may hear sacrifice, ramen noodles, old clothing, yucky shoes, no fashion. So what do you do to make this a comfortable way of living so that you're not feeling deprived and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I love that question because you're so right. So often people hear the word frugal and they think cheap, or they hear the word budget and they think deprivation. Well, if I budget my money, then that means I have to give up all joy. But it's not true. I think Mrs. Frugalwood uses two phrases that I really like. It's luxuriously frugal and joyfully frugal. And I'm not anywhere near as extreme as the Frugalwoods.
No.
So something that I think of is really important. I don't like going out to eat. I know I'm the only person in the world who doesn't like it, but I was a waitress for 3 years.
Oh, you're over it.
I'm done. And also people, it's just weird. I won't go into it, but I have like weird anxiety around it. So that's an area of my budget that is like $10 a month because I just don't do it. And so I'm like, I'm happy to give that up and save that money. Now that said, I spend on things that really matter to me. Like this year, my boyfriend and I spent 2 weeks. We were in Seattle, Portland, and Jackson Hole, and we flew everywhere.
Chic, chic, Jackson Hole. Like, Jackson Hole. My mom actually lived there. Back in the day. Yeah, she worked at one of the resorts back in the day, and it's still one of her favorite places. I think it's hilarious that she did it.
It's so beautiful there. It's like so stunning and calming, and I loved it. And I knew that we were going to spend. Probably, I guess we spent about $2,500 each to do this trip. And I was like, yes, worth it, 100%. And I saved for like 5 months beforehand to afford that. So for me, that was all my like going out to eat money. I'd rather put that towards travel. So I think when you're looking at your life and wondering, how can I be more frugal? What can I cut back in? Ask yourself, well, what do I value? If you really like going out to eat, keep that, but then cut back on the Netflix, on the cable, on your gas money, or whatever it is. You know, like give up one thing so you can get another thing that you care about more. And that's how I live my life.
You know, it's really funny. I actually never eat out unless it's like really special thing, because I'm a foodie, so I'm very particular. So I don't eat fast casual. It can be good. It's not that it's not good necessarily. It's just that if I'm going to eat out, I want to eat something that I would not make at home. Right.
Yeah. Totally.
And I'm a really good cook, so I enjoy what I make at home. So for me, when I go out, it's like, I'm dressed up, going to something special in Denver, like a special event, like the, in a couple weeks, which I won't be doing because I'm going to Texas, but we have the Harvest Festival or some kind of harvest event where there are different restaurants throughout the city with special discounts and like multi-course meals. I love that kind of thing. I absolutely geek out over it. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Okay. But because I know that I'm willing to spend like $200 on it, and those actually are cheaper than that, but I'm just saying, I'm willing to spend like $150 on a 5-course meal at a farm outside on a, you know, with a long table and horses in the background, like I'm that girl, then that means I'm not going to be going to all these fast food places and stuff like that, because I can do one, I can do the other, but I'm not going to do both.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I'm sure you know this, Michelle, but there are three areas in your budget where most people tend to spend the most, and that's in housing, transportation, and food. So if you can cut back on one of those, like we, with our apartment, we were like, yeah, we're going to take the wonky floors and save ourselves $600 a year. Well, cool. Now I've got $600 to invest or to use for traveling or whatever. Or if you can, and I kind of hate the advice where it's like, well, just get a roommate or Airbnb. Like we live in an apartment that we rent. We can't Airbnb. It's against our lease.
Exactly.
And like we, it is a 2-bedroom, but it's a 1-bath. And if we had a roommate, honest to God, it would be so awful in terms of who's using the bathroom.
My place is quirky as hell. Like literally, I'm not bringing another person up in here. Like, no, my friends, when they visit, that's fine. But I need to do work. I need to put work into my place. Like I wouldn't even feel right right now about bringing someone to live here with me. One, because it's too small. I mean, I could do it, but it's not ideal because you know, I lived in a dormitory, so yes, I could do it. But I'm like, there's just a certain level of comfort that when I get to my house, I want to experience. And I'm not going to apologize for that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think too, what I really learned when I was paying off my debt is that my final debt sprint, as I call it, was $18,000. Now to someone making that same amount in income,
It was a lot of money.
Crazy money. It was like crazy money. But if you're someone making $50,000 a year and you've got $25,000 in debt, like those are numbers you can work with. So kind of think about, well, do I want to kind of buckle down for the next year and really knock this out and take that 1 year of being really hardcore, which is what I chose, or do I want to be responsible and really good about this, but notice like I'm going to give myself 2 years? And there's no wrong answer. Like I was sad and anxious and really needed a direction for my life. And paying off debt and getting financially literate gave me that direction. But I think too, if you've got like, oh, I hit the mic again, God damn it. I'm moving my hand.
I can hear like, it and I think it's hilarious.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry, listeners.
No, you're totally fine.
If you've got $120,000 in debt, and even if you're making $50,000, like you can't out frugal $120K in debt on that salary. No amount of roommates or catering leftovers is going to make that disappear in 10 months. So you have to kind of realize your situation is different from everyone else's out there on the internet or on the podcasts and do what's right for you.
You know, it's really interesting that you mentioned this because I was so depressed and stressed, and I was dealing with a lot of physical issues because of my debt and my job and just life. I needed time to re-energize because it takes a certain level of energy to do what you did. And I just didn't have it. I actually, last week, I just went to the dentist for the third time this year because they're great. I love them. And this will all make sense in a second. When I quit my job at the end of 2014, some of the things I was dealing with was I had broken a tooth from stress. I'd been clenching my teeth. So I was dealing with a lot of stress and anxiety. My hair fell out. I was gaining weight. So it was really bad. And I think a lot of people are really hard on people who don't just knock it out really fast. And I was like, I was breaking apart physically, like literally coming apart. Last week, my dentist went back in, like they worked on that tooth and did a rebuild. They went back in and did another rebuild on it because that's what happens when you're stressed out. And at that moment, it may not be the right time to like buckle down and pay off your debt. It might be one of those times where you take a step back and you manage your health and wellness and just stabilize the situation as much as you can before you go all in. So for me, I had to just stabilize my mental health and wellness and well-being, if you will, so that I could even get to the point where I could do what you're doing. So I'm right now this year, literally starting from now until probably about this time next year, I'm doing what you did because I actually have the energy to do it. Like I just didn't have the energy. And I'm really excited because I've stabilized a lot of the stuff that was going on, but now I actually have the energy to implement systems and just really focus. And I think that people, I really appreciate that you mentioned that there's no right or wrong. It's just what's the best for your personal situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that really bothers me about our personal finance world is that so often you read these articles or blogs that are written with this tone of like, well, I did it, so you should be able to do the exact same thing. Yeah, and it's like
very judgy.
Very judgy. Very different scenarios, so I can't do what you did. And you know, your point is also well taken, where it's like, yes, I think also too, people are like, just push yourself, push yourself, push yourself. And that's certainly what I did, but I was miserable at times. Like, I wish my boyfriend was here right now because there was one time I still had about $6,000 left to go on my debt. And I was working for like 11 straight days before I was going to get even like a half day off. And I was just looking at my balances and I started crying. I was like, aww. I've worked so hard. I've already put in so much work and I still have $6,000 to go. Like that was still such a huge amount of money. I knew like I had calculated out how many hours I had to cater. Yeah, and I was like, this is so much of my life. And like, you know what, looking back, I'm so glad I did what I did, but I could have taken an extra 2 months and enjoyed a weekend off, you know, or taken myself on a little trip somewhere to recharge, to refresh, and to give myself that grace of like, I'm a human being. There's more to life than the numbers, and I'm going to go experience that more.
So I literally could talk to you forever, but we're not going to do that. We're going to hold off and talk to you again in the spring. I want you to leave us with your best piece of advice for people who are kind of in your shoes at that time, like dealing with debt repayment or just a tricky financial situation, and where everyone can find you.
My best piece of advice for anyone who's dealing with any kind of tricky financial situation, whether it's debt or anything else, is to look at the entire situation without judgment. And that sounds really, it sounds kind of woo-woo, or it sounds like I'm passing the buck a little bit. But
I'm woo-woo.
You can't make any change until you know what you've got going on. So like for me, the very first thing I did was I had 5 different loans with 2 different lenders. So tracking down all the loans and their interest rates and understanding how much I have total, how much I have in each loan and what each interest rate is, gave me the launch pad to do all of the other things I did. But you have to know what you're working with, what problem you're trying to solve before you can come up with the solution. So step one is always just look at the situation and try and look at it. It was so hard for me to look at it and not be like, I'm such an idiot. Why did I take out so much in debt? Why did I do this to myself? But just try and look at your situation without any kind of judgment, without any kind of negative talk, and just understand it. I think that's always, it's super helpful from a financial point of view. And it's also kind of cathartic to just say, here's what I'm working with.
Well, you do the best you can with the information that you have.
Exactly. And then if you guys want to talk to me, I always encourage people to email me. It's Kara@bravelygo.co. My website is bravelygo.co. Instagram is @WeBravelyGo. Ooh. Twitter is @BravelyGo. I couldn't get Bravely. I had to get BravelyGo.
No, but I like it. I like it. So thank you so much for hanging out with me. I think that you have a lot that you're going to be doing in the future. I'm excited to see all the things that you share with your community and with the rest of us, and just wishing you great, great success, and see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see you soon. Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.